You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
There are an estimated 107 uncontacted tribes around the world. Most remain separate because they choose to, but in many cases, their way of life is being seriously threatened. With me now for the first part of today's underreported series is Jonathan Mazower of Survival International, an organization based in London that supports tribal peoples worldwide. Welcome to my show.
Thanks very much for having me.
If these tribes are truly uncontacted, how is it possible to know there are 107 of them? Could there be more? Could there be fewer?
That's a rough estimate. No one really knows exactly how many there are, but it is possible to know where some of them are. For example, in some cases, their communal houses and their gardens have been seen from the air, so you can see that there are people living there. In other cases, for example, there is one tribe in Paraguay, the Ayareo, where most of the tribe have had contact with outsiders for anything between 3 and 40 years. And they know that they have relatives who are still in the forest and resisting contact with outsiders.
Now, Paraguay does not have a piece of the Amazon. Are there other jungles that we really don't even think about when we're talking about South America?
Well, I guess the Amazon certainly has most of the uncontacted tribes in South America. There are one or two outside the Amazon, principally in Paraguay, which is a kind of large subtropical forest just below the Amazon basin. But then the other big area where there are uncontacted tribal peoples is on the island of New Guinea, which is split into two parts. One is the country of Papua New Guinea, which is the eastern half of that island, and the other is the Indonesian province of West Papua in the western half. And because of the geography of that island, which is in the middle of it, extremely mountainous and covered in rainforest, there are known to be a large number of uncontacted or very isolated tribal people there who aren't particularly hiding from anyone. It's just the nature of the geography of that island means that there are a large number of people living in isolation.
Now,
there are also other parts of the world where there are still uncontacted tribal people, and I suppose the case par excellence of that is on the Andaman Islands, which are a group of islands in the Indian Ocean, one of which, called Sentinel Island, has what are probably the most uncontacted tribe in the world in the sense of genuinely having no contact with outsiders, because it seems as though these people, who probably number no more than a couple of hundred, have been living on that island for a very long time indeed and have actively resisted attempts by anybody else to make contact with them and to go there. And most recently, two Indian fishermen landed on that island about last year, I think it was, and they were killed by the inhabitants of that island. So, surprisingly, even in a place like the Indian Ocean, there are still some very isolated tribal people.
And there are a few in Africa as well, I understand. But when we've been using the word uncontacted and isolated interchangeably, they mean two different things, don't they?
Yeah, I think it's important to realize that there is basically a spectrum. And apart from people like the Sentinelese in the Indian Ocean, most people who we loosely describe as uncontacted tribes have had some kind of contact, probably with neighboring tribes. They may not have had contact with members of the national society where they live, but on the other hand, their ancestors might have had fairly recently. For example, in the western part of the Amazon, a lot of the Indian groups there who are now very isolated are the descendants of people who survived the rubber boom that swept through the western Amazon about 100 years ago and decimated the Indian population of that area. And about 90% of the population was wiped out. And the survivors are the ones who fled, basically, into the headwaters of the rivers, into the most remote areas. And it is their descendants who today are living in what is called voluntary isolation.
Because they see this as the only way that they can survive?
Exactly, yeah. And often they make it very clear that they don't want outsiders coming into their territory, either through violence, and because the Western Amazon is a region that's experiencing something of an oil boom at the moment, there are oil workers penetrating the whole of that area, and they do sometimes get killed, and loggers get killed as well by these people who are clearly acting in fear of their lives. And they can also leave signs which are interpreted by neighboring tribes as meaning, don't come here, you know, we don't want anyone on our land.
But I'd assume it's easier to remain isolated on an island than in the Amazon, where farmers, loggers, prospectors, people looking for oil, are likely to come in search of riches.
Yeah, I think that's certainly true. And in a way, the archetypal example of that is this group, the Arreo, who live in western Paraguay, who live in an area of forest that is being encroached upon from every direction. And so it's kind of shrinking before their eyes. And a group of 17 of them came out of the forest 3 years ago because the water holes where they got water during the dry season had been occupied by poor Paraguayans who had gone in there. They saw that it was basically virgin forest, and they were settling there and bringing cattle in there. And so even in this, what had been a very isolated area, there were now settlers, and the Indians were afraid of them, and as a result could not go to the water holes, which were crucially important to them in the dry season. And so they actually came out of the forest, and they made contact with other members of the tribe and said, we need water. We can't get any water. So, you know, they're very vulnerable to people who basically want either the land or the resources that are on the land. And the people on Sentinel Island in the Indian Ocean have the advantage, as you say, that they live on a very discrete territory, and it's very easy to defend. And everybody knows that you don't go there, because if you go there, you'll probably get killed.
But you said also that some of these groups are rather small. Wouldn't inbreeding be a problem?
Well, curiously enough, it doesn't seem to have been. And people like the Sentinelese have probably been living by themselves in isolation for a very long time indeed, certainly centuries and probably thousands of years. And I'm no geneticist, but it doesn't appear to have been a problem, because people like the Sentinelese have been filmed by government missions who attempted to contact them in the 60s and 70s. And they are clearly extremely healthy. And in fact, the Amazonian Indians who are living in isolation as well are often visibly much healthier than their contacted brethren, if you like, who often see their land taken away from them, and with it their source of livelihood and subsistence.
Also exposed to diseases that they may not have any immunities to.
Yeah, that is the classic killer of these kinds of human populations, as you say, and it is one of the key reasons why Survival and lots of other groups say very strongly to oil companies, logging companies, those kinds of people who are trying to enter these people's territories, that it is extremely irresponsible to try to make contact with tribal groups living in isolation. Because things that to us are insignificant, like the common cold, as we know from history, can be absolutely deadly. And we've seen that time and time again, that these epidemics sweep through these populations. There have been examples very recently in Peru, where tribes that have been contacted just in the last 10 or so years, half the population have died within a matter of months after contact, from respiratory infections caused by kind of flu virus and common cold and that kind of thing.
I'm talking with Jonathan Mazower of Survival International. Well, I understand that a new problem is tourism. Tourists take trips in hopes of making first contact with an isolated tribe. Isn't this in violation of the rights of these people to live without being disturbed?
I would say it is, yes. I don't think it's a very big phenomenon, but it is definitely there. And there have been, there was one very publicized example in West Papua of an American guy who was taking tourists in on what he said were first contact expeditions. And there has been a lot of controversy as to whether, in fact, the whole thing was a hoax and whether the contact was merely all a kind of being staged for the tourists' benefit. I've no idea whether it was a hoax or not, but if it wasn't, it is clearly that kind of thing is very irresponsible, firstly because of the dangers of disease, secondly because under international law, these tribes have the right to own their lands, and they have the right, just as anyone else has, to say who comes onto it and who doesn't. And most of them have made it quite clear that they don't want outsiders on their land. They have very good justification for taking that view. And it's very irresponsible to bring tourists in and kind of force yourselves onto them, apart from the consequences it could have for both parties, because there could very easily be some kind of violent encounter.
Well, are they subject to local laws? If there is a violent encounter, would a member of one of these tribes, could a member of one of these tribes be arrested for murder?
I've never heard of such a case happening. And in fact, there was in Ecuador a couple of years ago, there was a case of a group of Indians who had been living in isolation, and other members of their tribe, but from a rival clan, went in and killed quite a large number of them. And this was basically a very long-standing clan rivalry. And the even though there had been a very terrible massacre, the killers were not brought before Ecuadorian justice, because it was basically recognized that that would be a completely inappropriate thing to do. These are people who have no idea that they are living in a country called Ecuador, or that there is such a thing as a country called Ecuador, and they're certainly not aware of national laws and so on. So I've never heard of such a case, but quite besides the sort of legal aspect of it, of course, the human aspect is in a way much more important. And as I say, these tribes have repeatedly shown their desire to be left alone. And what we campaign for and many others campaign for is for their lands to be protected so that they can make contact with outsiders when they want and in the kind of manner and pace of their own choosing. That's absolutely critical to this process coming out well for both parties.
Have you personally visited any of these isolated tribes?
I visited Indian groups in places like Paraguay who came out of the forest relatively recently, a few years ago. And
what do they tell you?
Well, one of the things that I wanted to talk to them about was their experience of outside society whilst they were still living in the forest. And I remember a very interesting conversation with a middle-aged Diarreo man called Pau Chai, who had come out of the forest with his family in, I think it was 1998. They had been living by themselves for many years after having been separated from the other members of the tribe who were still in the forest, because it's an area where cattle ranchers are buying up the forest, and they're sending in massive bulldozers to clear paths through the forest. And they had, Pau Chai and his family had sometimes seen these bulldozers, and they'd seen people driving them, and they had thought that these were huge animals with people riding on their backs who could smell them and were coming after them, and it had caused them utter panic, and they had abandoned their house and their gardens and all their possessions and fled into the forest. And so you got some idea from that conversation of just how frightening and disruptive these incursions into their territory must be, because if they're forced to abandon their crops and their houses, all their especially their weapons, their bows and arrows and so on, life is very tough for them until they can establish themselves again. And they were clearly living basically in a permanent state of anxiety that these unknown creatures from outside would keep on coming in and coming in, and that is why they eventually decided to make contact with outside society. And they described very vividly that experience of contact, where they saw a Paraguayan working on a ranch, and they kind of came out of the forest and approached him and were very frightened, as was he, because to him a bunch of naked Indians had suddenly come out of the forest with brandishing weapons, and he was terrified that they were going to kill him, and they were terrified that he was going to kill them.
Well, as people look for more places to farm and to find other natural resources, aren't we more likely to hear these kinds of stories in the future? Is it even, do you think it'll ever be a time when it will be possible for all but a handful of tribes to remain uncontacted?
Well, I don't take a pessimistic view of this. You know, people have been saying for a very long time that it's inconceivable that such groups of people still exist, and they still do exist. And in fact, there are probably more known now today than there have been at any time in the last 30 or 40 years. So I think the fundamental point is there's nothing inevitable about the demise of tribal people like this. And even after they have had contact, as long as their land is relatively secure, there is no reason why they are going to give up their ways of life, their culture, their language, and so on, just because they have some kind of contact with outside society. It's not as though they're all going to start wearing T-shirts and jeans and listening to rap music and drinking Coke. One of my colleagues visited a tribe in Brazil recently who were contacted about 20 years ago, when only around 90 of them survived. And they live in an area of rainforest that has been protected, certainly until recently. And their population is now about 400. And if you see them, they are visibly thriving. They are extremely healthy. They are self-confident. They speak their own language. They have their own customs. They can sustain themselves. They have their own ways of treating illnesses and disease. They are taking what they want from outside society on their own terms.
Well, hasn't there been a debate among anthropologists for quite a while as to how to deal with uncontacted people, about balancing the desire to learn with respect for these people's desire to maintain their way of life?
I think most anthropologists today would say that people like this, who are so vulnerable to outside diseases, it's absolutely critical, firstly, that they be left alone where possible, and secondly, where that is not possible for some reason or other, that the process of contact be very carefully managed. There have been experiences, especially in Brazil, where there is a whole government unit dedicated to uncontacted tribes in the Amazon, which does occasionally make contact with them if they think they are at imminent danger. If, for example, there's a gold rush into that area, or there's a lot of logging going on. And they generally do it in a very controlled and thought through and fairly responsible way. So I think as far as the field of anthropology goes, most of them would say that clearly, if they want to be left alone, they should be, until they're ready to make contact on their own terms.
My guest has been Jonathan Mazower of Survival International, talking about the 100 or so uncontacted tribes, or at least isolated tribes, around the world. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.